raised an eyebrow. It's a free country, you know. You could have fooled me. Naughty Mrs. Broadhurst. He shook his head. You are trying to provoke me. His English was excellent, with only a faint trace of an Afrikaans accent. No, Inspector. We are protesting the blatant gerrymandering of this perverse government, the erosion of the rule of law, and the abrogation of the basic human rights of the majority of our fellow South Africans merely on the grounds of the colour of their skins. I think, Mrs. Broadhurst, you are repeating yourself. You told me all this last time we met. The inspector chuckled. Next you'll actually be demanding that I arrest you again. Let's not spoil this grand occasion. The opening of this parliament, dedicated as it is to injustice and oppression, is a cause for lament, not celebration. The inspector tipped the brim of his hat, but beneath his flippant attitude was a real respect, and perhaps even a little admiration. Carry on, Mrs. Broadhurst, he murmured. I'm sure we'll meet again soon. And he sauntered on until he came opposite Tara. Good morning to you, Mrs. Courtney. He paused, and this time his admiration was unconcealed. What does your illustrious husband think of your treasonable behaviour? Is it treason to oppose the excesses of the National Party and its legislation based on race and colour, Inspector? His gaze dropped for a moment to her bosom, large and yet finely shaped beneath the white lace, and then returned to her face. You are much too pretty for this nonsense, he said. Leave it to the grey-headed old prunes. Go home where you belong and look after your babies. Your masculine arrogance is insufferable, Inspector. She flushed with anger, unaware that it heightened the looks he had just complimented. I wish all traitoresses looked the way you do. It would make my job a great deal more congenial. Thank you, Mrs. Courtney. He smiled infuriatingly and moved on. Don't let him rattle you, my dear, Molly called softly. He's an expert at it. We are protesting passively. Remember Mahatma Gandhi? With an effort, Tara controlled her anger and reassumed the attitude of the penitent. On the pavement behind her, the crowds of spectators began to gather. The rank of white-clad women became the object of curiosity and amusement, of some approbation and a great deal of hostility. Goddamn commies, a middle-aged man growled at Tara. You want to hand the country over to a bunch of savages. You should be locked up, the whole lot of you. He was well-dressed and his speech cultivated. He even wore the small brass tin hat insignia in his lapel to signify that he had served with the volunteer forces during the war against fascism. His attitude was a reminder of just how much tacit support the ruling National Party enjoyed, even amongst the English-speaking white community. Tara bit her lip and forced herself to remain silent, head bowed, even when the outburst earned a ragged, ironical cheer from some of the coloured people in the growing crowd. It was getting hot now. The sunshine had a flat Mediterranean brilliance, and though the mattress of cloud was building up above the great flat-topped bastion of Table Mountain, heralding the rise of the southeaster, the wind had not yet reached the city that crouched below it. By now the crowd was dense and noisy, and Tara was jostled, she suspected, deliberately. She kept her composure and concentrated on the building across the road from where she stood. Designed by Sir Herbert Baker, that paragon of imperial architects, it was massive and imposing, red brick colonnaded in shimmering white. Far from Tara's own modern taste, which inclined to uncluttered space and lines, to glass and light Scandinavian pine furnishing. The building seemed to epitomize all that was inflexible and outdated from the past, all that Tara wanted to see torn down and discarded. Her thoughts were broken by the rising hum of expectation from the crowd around her. Here they come, Molly called, and the crowd surged and swayed and broke into cheers. There was the clatter of hoofs on the hard-metalled roadway, and the mounted police escort trotted up the avenue, pennants fluttering gaily at the tips of their lances, expert horsemen on matched chargers, whose hides gleamed like burnished metal in the sunlight. The open coaches rumbled along behind them. In the first of these rode the Governor-General and the Prime Minister. There he was, Daniel Malan, champion of the Afrikaners, with his forbidding, almost frog-like features, a man whose only consideration and declared intent was to keep his folk supreme in Africa for 1,000 years, and no pride.